SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Eclipse Award winners. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports on 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online at the website too, stevebick.com. Last night, under the unique conditions that everything operates under, and certainly there's been a template for award shows before the Eclipse procedures last night, seemed to come off, for the most part, successfully, and a couple of things that I'm sure we'll talk about. Jay Pridman will be with us start hour two. There is a critique or three to be made. We'll save that, though. Let's enjoy the positives and the plaudits first and foremost. And there were very few surprises among the recipients, certainly. And Authentic, your horse of the year, and, you know, the two-year-old's essential quality, and Vequist, you know, easily. Authentic and Swiss Skydiver, your sophomore champions. Improbable and Monomoy Girl. The areas of potential intrigue didn't really pan out either. Whitmore, easily convincing point getter, and really in a lot of ways the most winning and warmest storyline of last night. And, you know, obviously, you know, Bob LaPenta and the ownership partners have had big horses and big wins, but it can't be overstated, really, that this is a particular distinction that Ron Moquette can just bask in. And one of the, you know, most appreciated and admired and liked horsemen out there. And, you know, you don't ever know, and there's never a guarantee that you're going to have another even potential champion come through your barn. And, you know, that's not to say that, you know, the George Weaver and the team with Vekoma, you know, who I know very, very well, were you know, exceedingly disappointed that, you know, the way things kind of turned. I mean, they wanted to really decide the sprint category on the racetrack, and it wasn't to be for Vekoma. But for Ron Moquette, this is, you know, this is something, no matter, you know, what horses come down the pike, and you know, Ron's certainly capable to, you know, bring a horse to the highest level of achievement. That was even, you know, evident before Whitmore won the Breeders' Cup Sprint. But you get a champion. You get a champion in the course of your career, and, you know, it's something that, you know, will always be attached to you. And that's one of the parts of last night that really resonated, and, you know, made the endeavor, you know, particularly satisfying. Gamine and on the sprint side, and when it came to the turf horses, Channel Maker, who, you know, seemed, you know, in a funny season for the Turfers, you know, seemed to be the one that was the most consistent. And rushing fall, too. And rushing fall was one of the, among the horse, the voting numbers, and Jay will delve into that. It was, you know, really the closest among the, you know, two or three categories that, that ended up being competitive. But rushing fall also, you know, I thought was the clear choice. And Moscato, who, you know, in a unfortunately, an abbreviated steeplechase season. Moscato, fairly obvious too. When it came to the owner and breeder, it ended up heavily skewed toward the, you know, the giant outfits, and Windstar. You know, Windstar, beyond just the commercial property and the, you know, the sheer volume of horses that they produce and sell and campaign, they really had a complete year as a, you know, as a breeding operation. And the owner category, I'm not gonna reiterate again my displeasure with how this is handled. And you know, it's nice for Godolphin, and you know, they've won a couple of others. This is my major complaint with the way this thing is operated. You know, not that Godolphin doesn't contribute, you know, tremendously, obviously, to, you know, to the greater good of the industry and the game. The constant attention and voting toward the top earners just on sheer volume just doesn't, it's just not the way this should be done. I'm, you know, and I'm not trying to insult the other, you know, other voters, but you have to dig down and, you know, look at the complete picture. And Godolphin is not a, you know, it's not like an eye rolling outrage by any means that, you know, that they end up winning. The outrage, of course, was that Gary Barber wasn't even a finalist. He ended up being the fourth first place vote getter. I've explained this many times. The, you know, first place votes is what determines your winner. And Gary Barber ends up the fourth with Seth Klarman and Godolphin. And the one that would just makes no sense, which was Team Authentic. I'm sorry. There's just no business receiving any votes as owner of the year. When the horse is already going to be horse of the year and three-year-old champion, that doesn't make them the owner of the year. It's a preposterous vote. It makes no sense. I'm sorry. And not when there's people that are spending millions of dollars and have been, you know, doing it for, you know, decades in some cases. And I that's the one that just had no business being part of this, you know, part of the finalists. Errad Ortiz Jr., who I explained this to. Errad wins, and fine, he had a very, you know, another good year. Joel Rosario deserved to win this, and I don't have to go through this again. Alexander Crispin, the bug in Maryland. Good job, and any of the three finalists were, you know, would have been worthy winners. Yarmory Correa and Louis Cardenas, all, you know, they've all distinguished themselves. And then Brad Cox, as kind of anticipated, your trainer. So there it is, the winners, and we'll delve into it more with Jay and. You know, I keep going back to this owner thing. You know, Gary Barber was the you know, acknowledging, you know, speech for VQuist, and then his partner that they're together on a number of horses, Adam Wachtel, for Channel Maker. You know, but Gary, it did give Gary, you know, the opportunity to, you know, thank everybody and acknowledge, you know, all the, you know, 19 stake winners that that he had, and everybody that was involved. And so, I mean, there was that kind of opportunity, you know, Bob Edwards with Rushing Fall and so forth, and, you know, Michael Lund Peterson, Gamine, and, you know, there was really, under the circumstances, it came off very nicely. It worked. You know, when you're involved in this, there's certain things that you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be emotionally invested, and you know, when you're involved in the game 24/7, 365, take it seriously, and so we'll talk more with Jay. And in fact, a quick rundown of what's going on. A terrific weekend again in store. Although it should be noted, today Santa Anita, of course, got out in front of the bad weather in Southern California and tabled the Friday card. And Naira yesterday, in fact, while we were on the air, word came down that Naira was going to cancel the high wind and cold today downstate. And it's cold here, minus something this morning. So they, between the cold and 35, 40 mile an hour wind gusts at, you know, off Jamaica Bay, no racing in New York today. So it opens up certainly chance to, you know, look around and play any variety of things. Certainly when we talk to Hammer in about 7-8 minutes, Oaklawn, one of your options, and you know, scattered around the country. We'll touch on, I'm sure when Scully joins us, Scully on after Hammer, we'll get some plays, and I'm sure that he's got a couple of Friday ideas, a couple of notable races when Hammer joins us about Friday, the Friday card. There's a non-winners of three allowance early on the card at Oaklawn today that caught my eye. Casual, the Lady Tack filly in there, and Lady Rocket and more. The very nice group. And you know, later there's an open, a very nice allowance going later on, going a mile and a 16th. And another non-3 from boys, 4 and up, going a mile and a 16th as well. Nice action at Oaklawn. And may have to, although Tina's got, I think, a partial day today, so we have to go down to Albany for a couple of things. And so I don't know if I'm going to play much today. I'll talk about the Sam Houston result in a minute. Jay Privin, I told you, Nick Early today, Nick Tamaro, he's got, everybody's kind of, I had to move everybody around this last 15 minutes. Nick at 10:30 or so after Jay, and for Nick, we'll talk Sunday's Sam Houston card, as well as the cross-country pick 5 in New York, which includes the Martha Washington and an Arkansas bred allowance. There's a New York bred allowance and a maiden special. And in between all of that, there's a maiden on the grass. Only one, obviously, with Oaklawn and an aqueduct being a big part of the pick 5 now on Saturdays. There's not going to be any grass. But Tampa has got a maiden special as their 8th race. That's, I think, a mile on the grass. And so we'll go over that with Nick as well. Mike Welch is early today, Mike at 11, and plenty to talk about with Mike with the Holy Bull card and the other, you know, the 3-year-old girls, the 3-year-olds on the grass, nice set of stakes at Gulfstream, and later as well, Keith Shamblin is going to join us, and we're going to talk with Keith because I haven't had a chance all week yet to get to the final results from last weekend and the 2020 NHC qualifications and the tour results and the winter contest, the rookie tour, and everything else. So we'll do some house cleaning and some wrap-up for the 2020 NHC season. And, of course, the season, it's going to be the longest season in history because we won't crown a 2020 champion until August at Bally's. So the tour, the new season starts now, essentially. All right. So that's partial. Couple of things, too, before we reach for Hammer. And that includes, I want to thank two people before I forget, because I'll keep putting it off. And I got the nicest, two really nice surprises in the mail. Stan in Queens. Stanley, you know, has literally been listening to the show from, I think, day one. Somehow he must have latched onto the show in July of 2005. Stanley, who, you know, has been around New York racing, walked tots for the chief, and just as wonderful a person, knows tons of people around the game. And, you know, Stanley made me a quarter pole. In fact, I should put a picture up of it. Really, really nice. So, Stan, I thank you so much. I got to get a note in or call you over the weekend. And Sally Ellen Hurst at Country Life Farm. Was it last week when they won they won one of the stakes at Laurel with Trombetta. And you know, talked a little bit about the Pons family and Country Life. And Sally Ellen sent me a wonderful Country Life gift pack, which had cozies and had hand sanitizer and a couple of Country Life buttons and a mug, and really nice. Thank you. Thanks to Stanley and Sally Ellen. I really appreciate it. Case, go ahead and reach for Hammer. We'll get started. And as we do that, a couple of things. A very nice maiden race yesterday, going six in New York, if you didn't see this. And Chad sent out Klarovich, More Than Ready colt, and even money favorite, which, you know, doesn't come as any surprise, ran really well. And I think an 83 buyer, I want to say. And in addition to Crowded Trade, that's the name of this More Than Ready, so keep an eye on this one. Crowded Trade, out of a Jumpstart mare bred by Forging Oaks, and was a Keeneland November sale. Actually, was a weanling purchase. How about that? Was a weanling. I just realized that. It was a weanling purchase, Keeneland November 18. And $185,000. So was a nice seller at that time. And Crowded Trade, you know, certainly working well. And the fact that the Chad left this horse in New York sort of tells you the story. I mean, you would think, you know, certainly the More Than Ready, you know, screams a little turf, but obviously Chad got the feeling this one would be fine, you know, on the main track. So stays in New York and wins it first asking. There's an addendum to this that is really interesting, and that is the runner-up. You know, speaking of glowingly of Ron Moquette, there was an Arkansas bred, a McLean's Music Arkansas bred, in this spot, Hyperactive Chris. From Michael Imperio and Vince Scuderi and partners, the whole hat full of partners. This was a $60,000 OBS buy last year as a two-year-old. I can't recall an Arkansas bred showing up in here. And one of the things that caught my eye, too, was the dam was by Pine Bluff. And of course, we were just, you know, all week we've been talking about, you know, John Ed Anthony and Lob Lolly and, you know, now Shortleaf. And here's a Pine Bluff mayor, Kathleen L., that Doug Matthews trained quite a while ago. I mean, she got a very, she raced till she was seven and got a very late start, obviously. You race till you're seven. She didn't start producing babies until she was probably like nine. So I just thought it was, that was pretty cool that here's a Arkansas bred and Hyperactive Chris set the pace and then, you know, couldn't withstand Crowded Trade, but was only beaten a length, and it was nine lengths back to everybody else. So these top two, Crowded Trade and Hyperactive Chris, very nice. And sort of curiously, I'm just noticing this. Crowded Trade was out of a mare named Maud S., and Hyperactive Chris is out of Kathleen L. So, kind of, interesting race yesterday. And then quickly, the Sam Houston action, the pick six carried over about 8,000 into today's card. And it started right away with C. Dub, who wins the first leg, was bet down from the morning line. And I kind of knew when I saw the price. You know, as they were getting into the gate, I thought, oh boy. And sure enough, and there were races. C-Dub, far from impossible in here, and starts the sequence 9:40. So I got knocked out of the pick six immediately, and was a little miffed. So I, you know, dive back in. The Run Happy colt, Drive Happy, gets it done in the fifth career start. And Vegas Guy, looked like Vegas Guy was going to go by, but Drive Happy stayed on. Full Trigger was as good as advertised. A good push from Chris Griffin. I was a little confused in that race, and Chris said he thought Full Trigger was, you know, way the horse to beat, and that proved to be the case. Sophie Doyle starting to warm up. And then Good Fight was terrific in that allowance, and won, you know, in hand for Broberg and Rye Eichelberry. So it you know, pick five's going along swimmingly, and I'm thinking, maybe we'll get five out of six and you know, hit the pick five and pick four. No Conso for you. Unbelievable. 21-1 Run Ballerina, and I'm sorry, I went back, and even though I was not 100% convinced that the 2-5, the 1-5 favorite was such a slam dunk. Even if I had gone 2 or 3 deep, I'm not getting to Run Ballerina. I just, no way. So that was it. Chicken in a pot. And then Wicked City wins the nightcap. That was also a terrific Chris Griffin push. He was on Wicked City. I thought maybe Malibu Mo was going to get there, and was actually a nice price, was 15-2. So anyway, the pick four paid $17.29. If you got that Ballerina in your play, and the pick five paid $3,800. So another carryover from Thursday to Friday at Sam Houston. Another nice sequence here tonight at Sam Houston. And we'll talk about the Sunday card in a little bit with Nick. Let's turn to Hammer, who's standing by at Hot Springs. And certainly, I think the Oaklawn card is going to get extra attention today, considering there's no Santa Anita and no Aqueduct. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, and I am standing by, and I'm actually standing. I've been moved, and that's why we got disconnected. The phones don't work everywhere here, and I'm literally standing in a marketing storage room here. So the phone works here, but yeah, you can't make it up. it's too far to go up to the roof again. So anyway, we're here, we're good, and yeah, we should, you know, this morning, driving in, I got up and I decided to go in a little bit early, and the sunrise on the way in was like unbelievable. And so I sent a little tweet out just to the picture.
I saw that.
And take a picture of trackside. I just stunning, just unbelievable. It's one of those mornings, but they're always nice, but this one was just particularly nice. So it's going to be a good day here. And I wanted to quickly go back to Monday. Told a few stories on Monday. It had some great reaction from them. We had some fun, and I heard from my buddy Scott Wolf, who was with me that night at Riverfront Stadium, and was kind of cool. Who I, you know, known for 30, 40 years, and haven't really talked to, you know, as much as I should have lately. But he got a hold of that story and gave me a call, and so that was kind of cool. I got a text from a lawyer in Miami, Larry.
Thank Larry you. Kerr.
He offered his services. Yeah, but I decided to, you know, try that again. He would represent me, so that was very cool. But anyway, that was fun on Monday doing that stuff, so it was all good. The calendars are in the mailroom. At least 90% of them are, so they've been kind of going through that. So they'll get in the mail by today or the weekend, so 90% of you will get them, and then I've actually only have 30 or 40 left to get done, so it's been a little slower than normal, but like I said, we get started here and I get busy, but the calendars will are making their way to you. So thank you for being patient on that. And I heard you talking about the Eclipse Awards, and I tell you, I forgot about it, and I got a little blurb on the phone that somebody had won, and I said, you know, let me turn it on. And it was actually, the show was pretty good. I kind of liked the format, to tell you the truth. It moved right along.
That was widely hailed, actually, that part of it. and you know, there was a certain number of connections that have sat through any number of Eclipse Award ceremonies who appreciated the way they could enjoy it last night.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the speeches were short, even the long speeches were short, which was great. And, you know, entertaining. And I don't know. I just thought it was pretty good. I figured, yeah, I'll just read about it in the morning type of thing. And I ended up watching the whole thing. So, kudos to everyone involved that moved it right along. And, of course, you know, bummed every year that you are not up there receiving an award, giving a speech. And I think, you know, I'll let your all the listeners know, you know, what the handicap is in your division, the media / internet division. You know, here you are toiling 15 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, you know, putting out, you know, news, information, interviews, you know, daily. And you are running up against someone who, you know, congratulations to all the winners. I'm not taking anything away, but someone who can do a nice feel-good piece in an hour and turn it in. And you have to, you know, go through your stuff and turn in 1 hour and compare it with it. And, you know, it's just, there is no comparison. I mean, yesterday's show with Charlie Hayward, I mean, that hour was, that was an Eclipse Award winning interview yesterday. So you're really handicapped in that division, and they got to find something else, some way to equalize that. And anyway, we know you're Eclipse win. All of your listeners know you're an Eclipse Award winner. So your day will come, but you know, it's not really fair when you're comparing the load of work and, you know, information that you provide us every day compared to someone who, you know, does a nice piece and sends it in, and they go, "Oh, well, that's pretty," and moves on. But so, congratulations to you on another great year of broadcasting.
Thanks, Sam. So, thanks.
There you go.
Thank you.
You know, the winners were pretty much all maybe what we expected, all warranted.
Pretty and, much, yeah.
So that was cool. You know, but you know what? Locally here, Whitmore making, you know, getting the golden ring was pretty cool. You know, just and we might see him again. We might see Monomoy Girl in a couple of weeks. We might see Essential Quality here in a couple of weeks. So very cool for that, to keep your eyes on Oakland. And like you said, today, especially with California canceling a couple days in advance, and also New York, We'll have some eyes on us today.
Now, you do anyway. I mean, everybody that anticipates the Oaklawn signal and the season, obviously they're already diving in. And in fact, on that topic, I suppose a quick glance at the first few days we should touch on.
Yeah, we had the first 3-day weekend, kind of like the shakedown weekend to see how it goes, and the lights came on and everything worked, and it was a pretty cool. And as we talked on Monday, a few fans is way better than none, as far as atmosphere. We're letting in some box holders and some Oakline quote club holders and some public that calls ahead and makes some reservations in the restaurant. And then all the licensees can come in and hang out anywhere on the ground floor in the simulcasting area on the apron and paddock area and hang out. And just to walk out and see people, with a beer in their hand and, rooting horses down the stretch, it was pretty cool compared to Zip Zero, quiet grandstand. So hopefully we can continue on with that. And, it's up to the state health department how we go forward. But, if things move smoothly, hopefully maybe in a month or two, we can, allow more and more in. So, it went well, I thought, opening weekend, and, carry on.
Absolutely. A couple of stakes to touch on. And I mentioned that the cross country has got the 5th and the 6th involved tomorrow. We'll go through that with Nick in a little bit. It's funny. I ended up as the week went on between the Brad Cox visit and others, we got a little bit of a advance looking ahead to the Martha Washington tomorrow. And this is an interesting group and Brad Cox has got that coach we talked about, and Joy's Rocket, turns up in here to start her 3-year-old season.
You're going to see a lot of that in our stakes with the Asmussen Santana versus the Cox Giroux team going at it. So obviously the eyes are going to go there most of the time, which and in some instances will leave some other horses unlooked and have the prices be juicy on them. And in this case, I don't know if you can get beyond those two, but this is a points race, the 3-year-old fillies going a mile for the Kentucky Oaks. And they will be Lasix-less here as the 3-year-olds are that are heading to the Derby. So, keep that in mind if that's one of the deals, but Joy's Rocket and Coach, one comes out of the Goldenrod, made a nice little run and got caught late. And Joy's Rocket, who's coming off a nice couple of wins and two overnight stakes. So, take your pick there. We'll see what the board says. They'll both be the favorites. And Will Secret, Dallas Stewart, he's king of the upset in a lot of places. And probably looking for some black type in here. But this horse quietly could sneak into the action here, Will Secret. And so keep your eye on that. Another stake on Saturday as well, the American Beauty. Fillies and mares going 3/4. And there's a couple horses in here, the 1 French Empire and the 4 Sunnydale have re-entered for Sunday, I believe, Sunday or Thursday, and probably won't run in here. So keep your eye on this. This race is loaded with speed. Frank's Rocket, who of course is a real deal. Amy's Challenge runs all the time, loves it here. The Matisse clan, the Matisse crew, put one in here, Ladies Island, and she is a rocket ship on the outside here. So, I mean, all the big guns, supposedly, they all got speed, which, turns my attention to a horse like Wildwood Beauty, who has a little closing kick. I mean, she's won 5 of her 18, hasn't won in a while, but maybe this thing sets up for somebody that can close, That's kept secret. I don't know, but these like I said, the first 3, they like to go and go fast. So, they could set it up for someone. One thing before we go, I wanted to point out that there's a couple of 3-year-old races here, And our next three-year-old will be in a couple weeks with the Southwest, and hopefully we'll see that Eclipse Award winner, Essential Quality, in there along with a couple others. I mean, the water gets deep here quick when you put up 750. I'll tell you that. So
yeah.
we'll lead into that race. But there's the Bob Lewis in California, and there is the Holy Bull in Florida. And one thing I wanted to point out was the races that lead up to these stakes. So if you look at the Bob Lewis, there's eight of them. Every single one of these, and this has to do with opportunity, every single one of these eight horses broke their maiden, and their next start was a stake, or is going to be a stake, which calls into, you know, that sounds great, and not to say that half of these wouldn't have done that anyway, but out there, there's just so few three-year-olds right now that have broken their maiden or in different barns that allowance races don't go, so you don't get that extra step compared to the Holy Bull, where there's how many horses are in there? There's nine horses, and four of them have run in allowance races. In other words, they've been able to take that little baby step up, which is not available as often as California, and so. You know, in California, you will break your maiden, you look around, and you go, geez, I got to run against the heavy head. So it's a little tougher sometimes. Not every horse is going to take the baby step, but if it's offered, sometimes it's better to go that way. And just kind of point that out. So sometimes when, you know, a horse wins a stake out there, like every one of these horses in this race, except for Spielberg, is one race. So, you know, sometimes you're not sure what they're beating. So anyway, just wanted to point that out. And of course, when they run here and in Kentucky, a lot of them have run in allowance races because they're available with just many more horses to make those races that don't interfere with the stakes. So I just kind of wanted to really kind of jumped off the page at me with when you got seven, eight horses here and none of them have run an allowance race because they're not offered.
It's interesting too, because last week, speaking of results at Oaklawn, I thought it was interesting that horse of Asmussen's, Swift Shore, who was a first out winner and then was away for a fair amount of time, and that felt like a horse that could come back in a stake spot. And it's funny because he ended up basically pairing up the debut win, you know, in terms of figure and so forth. And so maybe he's working his way toward a stakes spot and a stakes career. But it's an interesting dynamic, and especially when it comes to the most elite barns, you know, that have, you know, a preponderance, frankly, of stake horses. And, you know, you do see, you know, how some, you know, make that choice and look for an allowance race. And of course, you've told us plenty of times, Rick, the situation where a trainer comes in and is looking for an allowance, but the one doesn't necessarily materialize, and then they end up in a stake. In fact, we had that, who'd we have that with last week? I forget, or maybe 2 weeks ago. Somebody ended up running in a stake because the allowance race didn't go.
Right, and it happens, you know, frequently in all categories at some point. I mean, you'd like to offer both, which here at Oaklawn you can. There's, you know, a plethora of allowance races in all categories, and, you know, most of them go, and, you know, it gives you that one little extra small step before you're ready to especially for comebackers, gives you that little bit of, a leg up without facing the heavy hitters and getting your head in some. You see that with the young horses, you know, they getting their heads kicked in early, you know, it might do something to them as opposed to just taking those easy steps and then, you know, maturing along the way. But anyway, I just saw that there. I wanted to comment on anyone who didn't listen yesterday to, I think it was the second, third hour with Charlie Hayward. That you had on, and Charlie's going to be on next Thursday as well, I think you said.
Yeah, we're going to have a series.
That's great, and he's such a good guy, ex-head of NYRA, and very sharp, and wrote a nice article with Thurman commentary just regarding the way that talking about the computer bettors and the way the money is taken in and how everything needs to change. And Pat Cummings wrote something on the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation along the same way, that everything's turned online, but the takeout is basically the same as it was 20 years ago, and it hasn't evolved. So definitely listen to that. It's funny listening to Charlie, and I got to know him pretty good. Actually, I almost worked for him in 2007-08. Went there and interviewed for a job, and was going to take the job. And it's funny, I was out there with Gina, and we just couldn't find a place to stay and a place to live. We looked around for a couple of days. I remember, unfortunately, walking back into the office, and Charlie goes, "You're not coming, are you?" And I said, "No, we couldn't find a place to live." But what a good guy. I would have really liked to spend some more time with him. But you can tell by the way he presents himself and talks about the subject, well-versed. And anybody, like I said, go back and listen to that that hour yesterday and plan on listening next Thursday. But beautiful day here at Hot Springs. It is going to rain tomorrow, but we didn't cancel. We're still running. It's going to be good. It's part of the deal. This is our last three-day week, and then starting next week, we go Thursday through Sunday all the way out, except for the one holiday weekend in February. So, if you're not a normal Oakland player, today might be the day to pick up a form and check it out. A lot of big fields, and like you said, free allowance races on a Friday, and the market, we got some all kinds of stuff. You know, most of the fields are big, and enjoy it.
Hammer, best of luck, and we'll catch up next week. And as you mentioned, things whenever we get through, it seems now this part of January, Pegasus, and typically the eclipses are Pegasus week the last several years. It really does feel like the year it starts to roll at this point. So get some of this. Winter weather behind us as well, and we'll be rolling.
Sounds great. Have a great weekend, everybody, and bet some races, pick some winners.
Exactly. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter, and the action from Oaklawn staying right here to the top of the hour. Jay Pridman will join us at 7 Pacific, and right now, James Scully standing by. Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, I'm
first.
Go ahead.
No, first order of business. What'd you end up doing on and your final thoughts? I asked Ed this on Wednesday when it came to the future wagers.
I jumped in with I talked a little bit about it. I did get a little bit on Senor Buscador, mm-hmm. who I talked about. I played Medina Spirit, even though I think I'm going to try to beat him in the Robert Lewis. But I just thought that price was okay, 24-1. He's got a chance. I thought to be a shorter price, and that was really my only plays. I'd written about those horses. Oh, I did. I made a small wager as well on Midnight Bourbon at 26-1. We talked about it when I was on the show last week. I do think that colt has an upward trajectory and is much better than he showed last fall when he ran in the Champagne and didn't run well in the Champagne Stakes.
Well, and that's what you're trying to do with these. I mean, you're trying to speculate, who by the time, the next round, the next couple of rounds of these, these opportunities and Derby Day itself, who is going to be lower and lower as we move forward. And you also run the risk. I took a shot with Mutasabek only to have Todd, 48 hours later tell me, no Mutasabek. So, you pays your money, you takes your chances.
That was a good example, though, where, I think that really these pools should be scheduled around these big races. They'll get more handle, it would seem to me. And, you're playing Mutasabek at 47-1, where if he didn't get hurt and won the Holy Bull tomorrow, you know, what would its future wager odds
exactly
if it had pool two this weekend? So yeah,
exactly.
I understand that completely.
Yeah, that's you know, that's the exercise, and it's fun. I mean, listen, even if you just throw in, you know, $20, $10, whatever, just, you know, to give you something to watch and horses to track, and it's been a favorite for a long time. We'd certainly love to get it expanded as well. Also, looking back to last week, what how'd you make out? And I think. How'd you do in football? I forget. I got your.
I split. I took both dogs. Buffalo obviously just was awful. And plus, they were kicking field goals in the first half. I knew they were dead then. But and didn't get one defensive stop. It seemed like the entire game. So, but yeah, I was on Tampa Bay as well. So, split the picks on the radio show. I've been taking a look at the Super Bowl. I'll preview that next week if it's okay though.
Yeah, no, we'll do. I'm also going to do that online. The Twitter contest proved to be really popular, and kind of at the last minute, I slapped that up there.
I know, I saw that, but I didn't see it until after the game. So yeah, I thought that was really neat.
I'll get out in front of it, and we'll probably do like 12 props, you know, put it up like on Friday afternoon, so everybody, or Saturday morning, so that everybody has time to, you know, to look at it and figure it out. I mean, I've been looking at prop lists. It's insane what's gone on. I mean, there's literally hundreds of props. What about on the horse side? How was your weekend?
Well, I mean, I did like Colonel Liam a lot and hit a pick three into him, but you know I didn't do very good. I was really treading a little bit lightly at Gulfstream. I was trying to beat Nick Sco, which was a failed flawed strategy, obviously. I will say though that you know, the day before last Friday in that Smarty Jones Stakes, Caddo River, really, I thought looked terrific. I mean, that horse has won his last two starts by 20 lengths. So a little bit interesting. Hearts Fun really hasn't had a three-year-old that's made an impact in the Triple Crown yet. And we'll see if Caddo River can continue to move forward as the distances get longer.
Yeah, he made a splash as well as some of the maidens. So.
Yeah, definitely prevalence. I mean, really just, I mean, he's 12-1 on the morning line. He had a great looking work tab, you know, Bendaglia d'Oro. The real, like, negative with him, in a sense, was just, you know, from a betting perspective, was Brendan Walsh had a low first out win percentage. But, you know, he did still get bet down some, wound up being, I think, like 7.9-1. And, you know, he just was awesome. I mean, I like the way just power really just wrapped up on him late. He's got a lot of forward. And, you know, like seeing him win at 7 furlongs the first time out. And even at San Anito, the great one, I know that Fenway didn't run a step and, you know, probably wasn't beaten much in that race. But, you know, he looked good doing the part. I think his speed numbers, speed ratings came back solid on that race. And he's just a horse, to me, that has improved big time in his last two starts for Doug O'Neill. So he's intriguing. You know, it's like, I was making this point this week, you know, last fall, it just like, especially after Get Her Number won the American Pharoah, and then he got sidelined a couple weeks later, there just wasn't like any, other than Life is Good when he won in like mid to late November, there wasn't any buzz surrounding any of the 3-year-olds in California. And it's just in a short period of time, it's really changed seemingly. I thought that, you know, I think O'Neill now has like three, I mean, he had Hot Rod Charlie, but both the great one coming on like he did and wiped the slate, breaking his maiden like he did, and he'll be in the Lewis tomorrow. He's got three good horses. And Baffert, you know, he's got two of his top 4 3-year-olds right now are in this Lewis as well. Baffert and O'Neill have won 5 of the last 9 Kentucky Derbies between them. So, you know, it's interesting to see them really, like, I think, send out two top contenders each in the Robert Lewis in late January.
Yeah, I think, in fact, when we obviously we'll talk Lewis and Holy Bull with Jay Privman has tweeted on that number, you know, the 5 of 9. It's
I wrote the field story for it when it was drawn Wednesday, so I was drawing that up then. But
nice.
The the you know, that race, all four of their horses are extremely live in there. But that race even has, I think, a real wild card in this Roman Centurion, who couldn't have been more impressive visually, breaking his maiden when he stretched out the two turns his second time out. So it's just, I think it's a very, very interesting race that is very deep and got a $100,000 purse. And after seeing a lot of these short fields and these Kentucky Derby preps, I couldn't be more excited for that race at Santa Anita.
Yeah, no doubt. And then there's the, you know, the kind of varied cast that came together for the Holy Bull as well. This is a good pair. It's a good way to, it's almost February, you know, it's a good way to ease into February.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some action. Let's go.
All right. I'll start right at Gulfstream Park. I'll work my way backwards a little bit from starting with the Holy Bull. You know, the thing with Prime Factor, he looks like he has a little bit of this freakish quality to him, and he could just prove impossible to beat here for Todd Fletcher. But I will say this, you know, he broke his maiden that first time at 6 furlongs. In the field, he beat Bracken and Dr. Duke. Dr. Duke's in earlier on in a turf maiden special weight. They did not come back and really run very well the next time. The only horse from that race that's won was a Christoph Command horse. He shipped to Tampa to break his maiden. So I look at Greatest Honor. He's really a horse that been facing against a lot of, you know, good-looking horses. I mean, even when he ran, you know, his second race, he's third behind Speaker's Corner and Caddo River. And then in his next race, he runs ahead second. He gets beat by Nona Jindo, came back and ran third in the Remsen. And he finished 21 lengths in front of Overlook, who came back and broke his maiden by like 10 lengths, and he's going to be running in the Withers for Pletcher. So really, just I think that horse has huge upside, Greatest Honor. I think that the whole key for him, though, is going to be the pace. And it looks like there is some speed signed on. This Willie Boy from Post 2 coming off two front running wins at 6 furlongs. Even Awesome Jerry, you know, he was the speed of the speed in the Mucho Macho Man last time. Those two will be out there. Prime Factor will be up there in close attendance. And Greatest Honor could get a perfect setup in a sense, Steve.
Yeah, I thought I'm going to have to take a short price, but I agree. I thought it was him and Todd.
The race before that is the race 10 at Gulfstream, the Swedish Champ for 3-year-old filly. I mean, Pletcher has like the favorite or second choice on the morning line in all these 3-year-old stakes, and obviously has the top contender here in Con Lima. Honey Pants ran second to her last time for Clemont, another contender. I wouldn't be surprised to see either one of those run well, but it is there is a horse in here in this. White Frost that does intrigue me a little bit for Bill Mott. You know, switched her to turf last year off of a fourth and a second on the main track at Sprinton, stretched her out to two turns. And I really thought she not only looked good that day, but she showed a certain amount of professionalism to extract herself from tight quarters and the stretch run. Was flattered when the runner-up, Lindjum, came back and won pretty convincingly a pretty good maiden special weight race on the LeCompte undercard at Fairgrounds. So White Frost to me is the alternative in there. You know, at 9-2 in the morning line, she could offer a little bit of value. And I just think she's a filly that could have a big upside.
Nice. And of course, Junior down there riding well. And
yeah, 20 wins for Junior. I mean, yep. One of the like real things at Gulfstream as far as those jockeys, I mean, Jose Ortiz isn't riding that many mounts per se, but he only has 15 wins. I mean, he's got like about the same number of wins, almost as Lannery has almost as many wins as him. And, you know, John Velasquez, just being just 5 for 56, you know, I've seen it like with these Pletcher maidens. I mean, he's going with Irad Ortiz, Luis Saez. He's even put Tyler Gaffleon on some horses. And I know like Johnny B is getting a little bit older, but he is coming off a year where he won the Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Breeders' Cup Philly Amer Sprint. So he was riding pretty good just a couple months ago. And I was speculating whether, and I don't know what you think, Steve, but it's just that colony in New York is so tough with the Ortiz brothers and Luis Saez and then several other quality riders. might be kind of interesting to see him take his tack elsewhere, whether it's like Kentucky or California or somewhere.
Well, that story, if you want to flesh that out, I mean, kind of ties into, you know, the conflict over 'Tis the Law and Johnny separating from, you know, his life, virtually his lifelong agent and mentor Angel Cordero. And mm-hmm. you know, Ron Anderson's got the book, and, you know, Ron certainly is you know, had a, I thought, a very positive influence on you know, the season that John fashioned. And, you know, it is a different scenario with Pletcher and right now. And it's evident, you know, as you mentioned, with, you know, with Todd utilizing a wider array of riders. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't, there's certainly no, you know, animus or any issue on that front, but the dynamic has changed. There's no doubt.
I won't spend too much time on the Ford Gal. It's 7 furlong. It is an OSA qualifier. Just not a lot of speed in it, I didn't think, Steve. And Zog Gel should get the perfect trip at short odds, I thought. The Swale Stakes is a race where you have this horse by George who, you know, it's going to be tough to beat, obviously. Really ran a big race in mid-December at Aqueduct. And, you know, the runner-up, Two Boss, came back and won by like 5.5 lengths for Pletcher next time out. But it's interesting, this race, the Swale, short six-horse field, and four of them are front runners. And Poppy's Pride has a ton of early gas coming off that win in that inaugural. Likeable, they, you know, I don't know if they're going to send him off that effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but he's going to be able to make an early run at him, you would think, and even drain the clock at a lot of tactical speed. King's Ovation might not be good enough to win, Steve, but he's one of two horses to win at the 7 furlong distance. He broke from outside post in his first two races, including a nice maiden win at Churchill at 7 furlongs in late October. Last time he was stuck down on the rail, taking kickback for the first time, didn't fire. But that was a good, like, learning experience. And I like the fact that he has, like, these 5 furlong consecutive works in advance. He's a long shot to consider in the Swale.
Hmm. All right.
And then in the Kitten's Joy, I'm going to single around Kentucky Pharoah. I'm buying into this horse for Jack Sisterson and America Pharoah Colt. Just never surprised. It's going to be the probable favorite and went wire to wire last time, but no chance he beats the Kentucky Pharoah lead in my mind. In that race last time, that Dania Beach, Fighting Force was 3-5 in there, was drawn on the rail. He was in front a couple lengths out of the gate. Saez had intention of being on the lead, and he couldn't run with Kentucky Pharoah. I think he's really getting good, a horse that's really come on in the turf.
That race, if it's not Kentucky Pharoah or Never Surprised, it gets interesting. And I'm looking forward to talking to Mike Welch in a little bit. And he likes Chess's Dream, the maker on the rail. And I thought that the Kelly Breen isn't impossible with It's a Gamble. It's an interesting, I mean, even it's funny, there's a lot of smallish fields in the stakes lineup this week, and yet look at the Toboggan and the San Pascal, you know, with 5 and 6 and or 7 and this race, it's interesting. I know it, you know, nobody wants to see short field stakes, but in some cases they're well matched and you know, not drop kicks. I mean, I can hear that you like Kentucky Pharoah, you know, considerably here, but kind of talking broadly, because these are not capacity crowds tomorrow at Gulfstream.
No, they're not. No, they're not. I got a price horse first start, this Golden Spoke in race number 3. He's a first start for Jack Sisterson. I talked about Sisterson just now as well. I thought he was a little interesting there for Tyler Gaffleone. Obviously, the 3, Mutada, is going to take action, being a half-brother, a juvenile grade 1 winner, Warfront, Todd Pletcher, and you got Cassie Horse at the rail. But I did think, and Dr. Duke in there, but I did think Golden Spoke was a little bit interesting, had some things going for him. I thought I'd mention him at 8-1. And I will give him my thoughts on the Bob Lewis. You know, my first glance at that race, I mean, it looks like to me Medina Spirit's going to be on the engine. I mean, Cedillo is going to be committed to sending from that inside gate. I like the way Spielberg ran last time. I expect him to run well. But I am intrigued by Roman Centurion because I think Medina Spirit could be catching some pressure from Wake the Slate. And I just think the race could set up a little bit. So I'm going to play Spielberg and Roman Centurion in my multi-race bets and look to maybe play those two in vertical wagers.
All right. Any last second Friday push?
Yeah, I got a last second Friday push. I hope she has a little bit more about it. The number nine at Turfway Park in race three tonight, Arima. Philly making her second start for Cipriano Contreras. You know, I'm a big fan of his at Turfway. He's winning at like 26% clip. I thought he gave that Philly really showed improved speed last time. Ran six that day, so hopefully that will help her price. Number nine, Arima in race three at Turfway.
All right, let me print the, let me get that added in here. And that's at 7:15 tonight, 7:16 actually. And for those, Ed and I didn't get a chance to talk about it on Wednesday, but once again, I mean, if you're not looking at these cards at Turfway, and maybe they're just too deep, with every single race has got 12 horses, it is nuts
or more.
What's going on. It's crazy. It's amazing.
Tonight, the first race got nine, and then the next seven, the final seven races, all drew at least 12. I mean, several of them have AEs in there. So, it's there, man. Especially, you know, it's been sort of formful as well. But it, I mean, if you're playing a horse that's short odds, you get a real chance. If you're a vertical exotic player, to make some money there. So, I love those big fields, Steve.
Yeah, the racing has been excellent, and right from the bell at Turfway this year. James Scully, I appreciate it. James_Scully111, and enjoy the weekend. And we'll talk next week and get your Super Bowl action too.
All right, sounds good, Steve. Best of luck to you. Thanks for having me on.
James Scully, everybody. Top of the hour is upon us, a couple minutes in, actually. Jay Pribman is going to visit, and we will get the final analysis on the Eclipse results and the production last night. As I mentioned, I think Jay and I will have an equal kind of eye-rolling moment. Something just really embarrassing last night, that from a production standpoint, that I shake my head. We'll also get into the Derby Watch action with Jay, see what he thought about Caddo River. If you didn't get a chance to read his expanded Derby prep analysis afterward. And preview the Lewis and the Holy Bull with Jay. And I'm sure get an opinion, too, maybe from Jay on the San Pascal, which, as I mentioned, is not a big field, but it's a good, interesting group. Hour two at the races, Nick Tamaro to follow, Mike Welch and Keith Shamblin in hour three, back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.